Blog Talk Radio.
I had a dream the other night that, well, I didn't understand. A figure walked in through the mist with a flintlock in his hand. His clothes were torn and dirty as he stood there by my bed. He took off his three-cornered hat, and speaking low to me, he said, "We fought a revolution to secure our liberty. We wrote the Constitution as a shield from tyranny. For future generations, this legacy we gave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. The freedoms we secured for you, we hoped you'd always keep. But tyrants labored endlessly while your parents were asleep. Your freedom's gone, your courage lost, you're no more than a slave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. You buy permits to travel and permits to own a gun, permits to start a business or to build a place for one. On land that you believe you own, you pay a yearly rent, although you have no voice in saying how the money's spent. Your children must attend a school that doesn't educate, and your Christian values can't be taught according to the state. You read about the current news in a regulated press, and you pay a tax you do not owe to please the IRS. Your money is no longer made of silver nor of gold. You trade your wealth for paper so your life can be controlled. You pay for crimes that make our nation turn from God in shame. You've taken Satan's number. You've traded in your name. You've given government control to those who do you harm so they could burn down churches and seize the family farm and keep our country deep in debt, put men of God in jail, harass your fellow countrymen while corrupted courts prevail. Your public servants don't uphold the solemn oaths they've sworn, and your daughters visit doctors so their children won't be born. Your leaders send artillery and guns to foreign shores and send your sons to slaughter fighting other people's wars. Can you regain the freedoms for which we fought and died? Or don't you have the courage or the faith to stand with pride? And are there no more values for which you'll fight to save? Or do you wish your children to live in fear and be a slave? Oh, sons of the Republic, arise, take a stand. Defend the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Preserve our great republic and each God-given right. And pray to God to keep the torch of freedom burning bright. As I awoke, he'd vanished in the mist from whence he came. His words were true. We are not free, but we have ourselves to blame. For even now, as tyrants trample each God-given right, we only watch and tremble, too afraid to stand and fight. If he stood by your bedside in a dream while you were asleep and wondered what remains of the freedoms he'd fought to keep, what would be your answer if he called out from the grave, "Is this still the land of the free and home of the brave?" God bless you, and God bless this republic.
America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
Hey, Mr. Politician, living on that hill. Living in that life of luxury, all we the people's bill. Don't have a clue how the other living on their land. The rancher tries to feed his cattle and sheep on we the people's land. Try and live as a free man. Your body's illegal anymore. Time to stop these thugs from stealing what's been got handed down. Clock of a tyranny. For if we don't, then who will do it for ourselves? And how about our children? What kind of future will we leave them? And if we won't, we'll wake up slaves on the global plantation, calling for a revolution.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is my pleasure to welcome two great friends and partners, President Calderon of Mexico and Prime Minister Harper of Canada. Now, I've worked with Stephen and Felipe on many occasions. We joined our international partners from APEC to the G20. From our last summit in Guadalajara, we remember Felipe's hospitality and that of the Mexican people, including some very good mariachi and
Mexican.
Some tequila, if I'm not mistaken. I can't reciprocate the music, but Felipe, Stephen, and I are proud to welcome you.
Thank you.
Here today. Between us, we represent nearly half a billion citizens, from Nunavut in the Canadian North to Chiapas in southern Mexico. In between, the diversity of our peoples and cultures is extraordinary. But wherever they live, they wake up every day with similar hopes: to provide for their families, to be safe in their communities, to give their children a better life. And in each of our countries, the daily lives of our citizens are shaped profoundly by what happens in the other two. And that's why we're here. Today we focused on our highest priority, creating jobs and opportunity for our people. In the United States, our businesses have created nearly 4 million new jobs. Confidence is up and the economy is getting stronger. But with lots of folks still struggling to find work and pay the bills, we are doing everything we can to speed up the recovery. And that includes boosting trade with our two largest economic partners. As President, I've made it a priority to increase our exports, and I'm pleased that our exports to Canada and Mexico are growing faster than our exports to the rest of the world. In fact, last year, trade in goods with our two neighbors surpassed $1 trillion for the first time ever. This trade supports some 2.5 million American jobs, and I want more trade supporting even more jobs in the future. So today, Prime Minister Harper led us in a very good discussion about how our three countries can improve our competitiveness. We agreed to continue making our borders more efficient and more secure, so it's faster and cheaper to travel and trade. We're expanding cooperation to create clean energy jobs and combat climate change, an area in which President Calderon and Mexico have been a real leader. I'm pleased to announce that our three nations are launching a new effort to get rid of outdated regulations that stifle job creation. Here in the United States, our efforts to cut red tape and ensure smart regulations will help achieve savings and benefits to businesses, consumers, and our country of more than $100 billion. And we're already working to streamline and coordinate regulations with Canada and Mexico on a bilateral basis. So now our three nations are going to sit down together, go through the books, and simplify and eliminate more regulations that will make our joint economy stronger. This is especially important, by the way, for our small and medium-sized businesses, which, when they start exporting, often start with Mexico and Canada. So this is going to help create jobs, and it's going to keep us on track to meet my goal of doubling U.S. exports. More broadly, I reiterated my commitment to comprehensive immigration reform, which would be good for workers and good for business. I'm pleased that Canada and Mexico have also expressed an interest in joining the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Consultations with our TPP partners are now underway on how new members can meet the high standards of this trade agreement, which could be a real model for the world. And I very much appreciated President Calderon updating us on preparations for the next G20 summit, which he will be hosting in June. Our other major focus today was the security that our citizens deserve. Criminal gangs and narco traffickers pose a threat to each of our nations, and each of our nations has a responsibility to meet that threat. In Mexico, President Calderon has shown great courage in standing up to the traffickers and cartels, and we've sped up the delivery of equipment and assistance to support those efforts. Here in the United States, we've increased cooperation on our southern border and dedicated new resources to reducing the southbound flow of money and guns and reduce the demand for drugs in the United States, which helped to fuel this crisis. And today, each of us reaffirmed our commitment to meeting this challenge together, because that's the only way that we're going to succeed. Beyond our borders, these cartels and traffickers pose an extraordinary threat to our Central American neighbors. So we're teaming up. Defense ministers from our three countries met last week as a group for the first time ever, and we're going to be coordinating our efforts more closely than ever, especially when it comes to supporting Central America's new strategy on citizen security, which will be discussed at the Summit of the Americas in Colombia next week. So again, I want to thank Stephen and Felipe for being here. When I came to office, I pledged to seek new partnerships with our friends in the Americas, a relationship of equality and shared responsibility built on mutual interest and mutual respect. That's what we've done. And it would have been possible without the leadership and sense of purpose that these two outstanding leaders have brought to all our efforts, including our efforts today. As a result, I believe our nations and our citizens will be more secure, more prosperous, and in a better position to give their children the lives that they deserve. So with that, let me turn it over to President Calderon.
Thank you, President Obama. Excelentísimo, señor Presidente Barack Obama, Presidente de los Estados Unidos.
Your Excellency, Mr. Barack Obama, President of the United States of America, Right Honorable Stephen Harper, Prime Minister of Canada, ladies and gentlemen of the press, Mr. Ambassadors, legislators, friends. First of all, I would like to thank President Barack Obama for his extraordinary hospitality and that of his government in hosting this Summit of the Leaders of North America. And briefly, I would also like to express on behalf of the government of Mexico, the people of Mexico, my family, and my own behalf, my most sincere sympathies to the family and relatives of former President Miguel de la Madrid Hurtado for his lamentable death yesterday. Tomorrow, we will be rendering homage to him in Mexico. The reasons that for which we are here today at this summit of the North American leaders with President Barack Obama and the Prime Minister of Canada, we've come through a workday that has been very fruitful and fluid with an exchange of opinions and progress to the benefit of our respective citizens. I'm also very thankful to my two colleagues for the openness with which we have broached some very complex items on our working agenda. I recognize and value their enormous commitment to our common region. The leaders of North America share a vision of a strong, solidary, safe, competitive region that is able to successfully face head-on the challenges of today. We agree that our common challenges can only be faced together, and therein lays the importance of having dialogue, strong dialogue amongst our three countries. The data that President Obama has just given us is very important with our that our trade has exceeded $1 trillion for the first time. And I think that that is not separate from a reality that has to be underscored. In this very complex world full of economic problems and severe crises, Canada, the United States, and Mexico are three countries that are growing right now and generating jobs today. And that growth and those millions of jobs, many of them have to do precisely with the greatest trade exchanges that we have ever seen amongst these great nations. I would say that the potential of North America tied to these three countries is such that within our own nations, we have a great deal to do to make the most of these opportunities for greater exchanges amongst our peoples. As we've mentioned today, we have progressed on various fronts. For instance, we've advanced on the deregulation in our countries, in our own countries, as well as amongst our countries. We have progressed as well in harmonization of certain standards that facilitate trade. We've also progressed, in our case, in the bilateral relationship in border infrastructure. And all of this has led, of course, to the benefit of Canadian, Mexican, and American families. Another line of ideas, I would also say that the three nations have renewed their decision to strengthen cooperation at the international level, particularly in issues as sensitive as the security of our citizens. We have reiterated the values upon which our societies were founded: democracy, liberty, justice, the respect for human rights. And today, the political dialogue amongst us is perhaps stronger than ever. We have renewed certain principles of our existence and of our challenges. The principle of shared responsibility, the exchange of information, and especially the strengthening of our institutions that has to be the guide of our cooperation. Clearly, I expressed to President Obama and to Prime Minister Harper that the fight that Mexico is experiencing for a safer North America also requires a strengthening of national actions, amongst other things, to stop the traffic of weapons, to combat with greater strength money laundering, and, of course, to reduce the demand for drugs that strengthens criminal organizations. I also expressed to President Obama and to Prime Minister Harper that Mexico recognizes that the commitment that they have undertaken to progress along those lines. It's also necessary to strengthen the regional security focus. And in order to do this, we need to include our neighbors and Central American partners who are also facing serious problems and who need our solidarity. The three countries have agreed to establish a joint dialogue mechanism with the Central American Integration System, the CICA, in support of the efforts undertaken by Central American nations to fight organized crime and in favor of regional security that benefits us all. Of course, in this meeting, we have broached the topic of the regional economy. The leaders of North America agree that the United States, Canada, and Mexico must continue to delve deeper into our successful economic relationship so as to generate more jobs and greater well-being in all three countries. Our governments recognize that it is absolutely necessary to continue to fully comply with the NAFTA, as well as to explore new means of strengthening regional competitiveness. And I am convinced that if we work together, we will become much more competitive than many areas of the world that we are competing with today. Mexico's position is that the solution to the complex economic situation experienced by the world today is not a return to protectionist practices that only isolate countries, reduce competitiveness of economies and send investment scurrying, but that part of the problem and part of the investment that we need to see in the world economy is to see a delving deeper into our economies and making the most of our advantages that show our economic complementarity in terms of investment, labor, technologies, natural resources, and only then will we be able to have successful in a world that competes ferociously by regions. The three countries have renewed our commitment to broaden the supply chains of the region, that it will be even more interconnected, supporting especially the small and medium-scale companies. Mexican exports to the world represent 37% of have 37% of American content. In other words, so American exports are American exports, and they generate millions of jobs for the region. And in that lays the need to work even more in this region and on a clear trilateral deregulation, for instance, in nanomaterials and emissions standards for some vehicles. Today, we also agreed to work in a coordinated fashion on actions that we will be adopting to modernize infrastructure and for border management. After 10 years, the last 2 years, we've seen three new border crossing areas between Mexico and the United States after 10 years of not having seen one new route. And we continue to work in a coordinated fashion to make our border more dynamic so that it's a border of opportunities for progress on both sides of that border. Tomorrow, here in Washington, our ministers of economy and of trade will be meeting within the framework of the Free Trade Commission of the NAFTA, so as to continue to work towards achieving these objectives. Today, we've seen that prosperity in the region depends on a greater integration with full respect of our sovereignties in all fields. And in this context, I'd like to reiterate the interest of my country to join forces as soon as possible to the TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and its negotiations, because we know that Mexicans can contribute to a quick and successful conclusion of this project. If we join forces in this region where we see the greatest growth in the world, we will be generating benefits for our families, our workers, and also substantially improving the competitiveness of the three countries in this context. We are convinced that the experience and participation of Mexico will enrich this free trade project of the latest generation that encompasses countries in Asia, Oceania, and America. Our country has a clear commitment to economic freedom. We even have the support of the private sector so as to enter into the TPP. We are a nation that believes in free trade as a true tool to foster growth and development, and we have acted as a result of this. I would also like to thank the United States and Canada for renewing their support to Mexico and its presidency of G20. As you know, in June of this year, Mexico will host the summit of the leaders of the G20 in Los Cabos. We are convinced, over and above the topics that we will be dealing with there, that the complex international environment needs to be an opportunity so that the world can redefine its development models with a firm commitment to the well-being of peoples and the care for the environment. Ladies and gentlemen, in this summit, the representatives of the United States, Canada, and Mexico have undertaken an open, constructive dialogue, just as corresponds to countries that share values. We've talked about the enormous challenges facing us so as to work together in a globalized world, and as a result, we will be working on building a new era that consolidates the right conditions for development in North America on the basis of a successful partnership, as we have seen so far today. My dear President Obama, thank you for your hospitality.
Mr. Arbor.
Well, first of all, I'd like to begin by thanking you, Barack, for so graciously and so warmly, literally, hosting us here today. And I'd also like to begin by offering my sincere condolences to you, Felipe, and through you, to the people of Mexico on the passing of former President Miguel de la Madrid, who I gather had much to do with the NAFTA partnership that we enjoy today. J'aimerais également remercier le président Obama et le président Calderon pour une discussion fructueuse et utile. Canada places the highest value on the friendship and partnership among our three countries. We form one of the world's largest free trade zones, which has been of great benefit to all of our nations. We're also effective collaborators in the G20 in responding to the challenges of the global recession and instability of these past few years. Comme nous l'avons affirmé la semaine dernière dans notre budget, notre gouvernement se concentre sur la création d'emplois, la croissance économique et la prospérité à long terme pour tous les Canadiens et Canadiennes. As affirmed in our budget last week, our government is focused on creating jobs, growth and long-term prosperity for all Canadians. Le sommet d'aujourd'hui a été une excellente occasion de discuter de la manière dont on doit, en tant que partenaire nord-américain, continuer de travailler ensemble en vue d'assurer la prospérité de la population de nos trois pays. I'm especially pleased that the United States has welcomed Canada's and Mexico's interest in joining the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We also had useful discussions on continued cooperation in managing our borders, streamlining regulations, securing global supply chains, and advancing clean energy. In addition, we've announced a broadened plan for North American pandemic preparedness and a new North America, Central America dialogue on security to fight transnational organized crime. Finally, we discussed the agenda for the upcoming Summit of the Americas in Colombia. Canada looks forward to continue to working with the United States and Mexico to promote democratic principles, regional stability, and market-based economic growth with our partners in the Western Hemisphere. And once again, Barack and Felipe, I look forward to continuing our useful discussions in Cartagena.
Outstanding. All right, I think that we're going to take questions from each press delegation. So start with Juliana.
Thank you, Mr. President. After last week's arguments at the Supreme Court, many experts believe that there could be a majority, a five-member majority, to strike down the individual mandate. And if that were to happen, if it were to be ruled unconstitutional, how would you still guarantee health care to the uninsured and those Americans who've become insured as a result of the law? And then a question for President Calderon and Prime Minister Harper. Over the weekend, Governor Mitt Romney said that the U.S. used to promote free enterprise around the world. And he said, quote, "Our president doesn't have the same feelings about American exceptionalism that we do. And I think over the last 3 or 4 years, some people around the world have begun to question that." My question to the both of you is whether you think that American influence has declined over the last 3 to 4 years. And President Obama, if you'd like to respond to that too.
Well, on the second part of your question, it's still primary season for the Republican Party. They're going to make a decision about who their candidate will be. It's worth noting that I first arrived on the national stage with a speech at the Democratic Convention that was entirely about American exceptionalism, and that my entire career has been a testimony to American exceptionalism. But I will cut folks some slack for now because they're still trying to get their nomination. With respect to health care, I'm actually continue to be confident that the Supreme Court will uphold the law. And the reason is because in accordance with precedent out there, it's constitutional. That's not just my opinion, by the way. That's the opinion of legal experts across the ideological spectrum, including two very conservative appellate court justices that said this wasn't even a close case. I think it's important, because I watched some of the commentary last week, to remind people that this is not an abstract argument. People's lives are affected by the lack of availability of health care, the inaffordability of health care, their inability to get health care because of pre-existing conditions. The law that's already in place has already given 2.5 million young people health care that wouldn't otherwise have it. There are tens of thousands of adults with pre-existing conditions who have health care right now because of this law. Parents don't have to worry about their children not being able to get health care because they can't be prevented from getting health care as a consequence of a pre-existing condition. That's part of this law. Millions of seniors are paying less for prescription drugs because of this law. Americans all across the country have greater rights and protections with respect to their insurance companies and are getting preventive care because of this law. So that's just the part that's already been implemented. That doesn't even speak to the 30 million people who stand to gain coverage once it's fully implemented in 2014. And I think it's important. I think the American people understand, and I think the justices should understand that in the absence of an individual mandate, you cannot have a mechanism to ensure that people with pre-existing conditions can actually get health care. So there's not only a economic element to this and a legal element to this, but there's a human element to this. And I hope that's not forgotten in this political debate. Ultimately, I'm confident that the Supreme Court will not take what would be an unprecedented, extraordinary step of overturning a law that was passed by a strong majority of a democratically elected Congress. And I just remind conservative commentators that for years what we've heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or a lack of judicial restraint, that an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law. Well, here's a good example, and I'm pretty confident that this this court will recognize that and not take that step. I'm sorry. As I said, we are confident that this will be over, that this will be upheld. I'm confident that this will be upheld because it should be upheld. And again, that's not just my opinion. That's the opinion of a whole lot of constitutional law professors and academics and judges and lawyers who've examined this law, even if they're not particularly sympathetic to this particular piece of legislation or my presidency.
Your question was a little local for me, and so I'm glad that the President of the United States answered it. But I would take advantage of this moment to say that after increasing the budget line for the folk insurance sixfold, and after having built more than 1,000 new clinics in the country, we're getting close to reaching universal coverage of health care, full, free health care coverage for all people up to 18 years of age, including cancer coverage. Of the 12 million Mexicans, 106 million will have efficient, effective, universal health care coverage. So I would say that that I would hope that one of the greatest economies in the world, such as the United States, could follow our example in achieving this, because it was a great thing.
Well, I don't think you really expect me to intervene in the U.S. presidential election. Let me just say this, for Canada, and this is something that I think transcends governments in Canada or administrations here in the United States. For Canada, the United States is and always will be our closest neighbor, our greatest ally, and our best friend. And I believe that American leadership is at all times great and indispensable for the world. And I think over the past few years, we've done great things together in terms of the response both through the G20 and bilaterally on the recession and the recovery. We had, under your leadership, Barack, that successful intervention in Libya. Our trade relationship is the biggest in the world and growing, and so I think it's been a tremendous partnership.
Somebody from the Mexican press corps.
Hola, muy buenas tardes. Para el presidente Felipe Calderón.
Good afternoon for President Calderón. You were saying, you were referring to weapons. We'd like to know what President Obama said in terms of what's going to be done to stop the traffic of weapons. And President Obama, I'd like to know what plans your government has in the presidential election process in Mexico. What was discussed in terms of the interviews with the candidates in Mexico City? And I'd also like to know for the government of the United States, there's a threat for the country in this sense on weapons, Mr. President. The weapons have come into the country. Are there military leaks of letting the arms come through? What's going to be done? And for Prime Minister Harper, is the visa requirement going to be removed for Mexicans? Thank you.
That's a lot of questions. Go first.
Bueno, ha sido muy clara mi posición sobre este tema.
My position on this subject is very clear, and I would repeat it here. Let me broach it from another angle. It's been shown that when there is an excessive, quick availability of weapons in any given society, there is an increase in violence and the murders that goes on many years afterwards. This phenomenon took place in many places of Africa after their civil wars. We've seen it in El Salvador, Guatemala, in Eastern Europe, in Kosovo, in Bosnia. It's happened, it's taken place in many different areas of the world. And we sustain that the expiry of the assault weapons ban in the year 2004 coincided almost exactly with the beginning of the beginning of the harshest period of violence we've ever seen. During my government, we have seized over 140,000 weapons in 4 years, and I think that the vast majority have been assault weapons, AK-47s, etc., and the vast majority of these weapons were sold in gun shops in the United States. Along the border of the U.S. and Mexico, there are approximately 8,000 weapons shops. If we do our accounts, that means that there are approximately 9 weapons stores for each Walmart that exists in the United States and Mexico. So a good deal of our discussion did touch upon this. But I recognize at the same time the administrative effort that's been undertaken, particularly by President Obama and his administration, so that the agencies for control of illegal actions curb this export of guns and weapons to Mexico. We've seen a much more active effort in this sense than in any other time in the past. I have a great deal of respect for the U.S. legislation, especially it's the Second Amendment, but I know that if we don't stop the traffic of weapons into Mexico, if we don't have mechanisms to forbid the sale of weapons, such as we had in the 90s, or for registry of guns, at least for assault weapons, then we are never going to be able to stop the violence in Mexico or stop a future turning of those guns upon the U.S. So if I am against the traffic of weapons in Mexico, I'm against the traffic of weapons anywhere, be that within any circumstance. The government of Mexico will never be able to accept anything that has to do with opening this. So President Obama has been very clear on the position of his government. We understand that the work being done by the agencies to stop the criminals, but this cannot be an obstacle to the cooperation that we have to have amongst Mexico and the United States to stop these criminal activities that underlie this issue, and which is one of the greatest obstacles and problems for Mexico. I understand the internal problems for the, from a political point of view in the United States, and I mentioned this publicly in Congress in the United States, and I said things exactly the way I believe them. I said them outright. There's a great deal of discrepancy between points of view. It's a very complex political issue, but it is very important to underscore it. And I believe that's the only part of the question that I can answer it, and I would say that what President Obama has already answered was very well done.
Well, just very briefly, with respect to the presidential elections in Mexico, Vice President Biden met with the candidates to express sentiments that are similar to the ones that Stephen just expressed here with respect to U.S. Elections, and that is that the friendship between our three countries, the partnership between our three countries, extends beyond and is more fundamental than any particular party or any particular election. And that's the message we have to send with respect to Mexico. I've had an excellent working relationship with Felipe. I expect to have an excellent working relationship with the next Mexican president, whoever that candidate may be, because the underlying common interests that we have economically, socially, culturally, the people-to-people relationship that we have is so important that it transcends partisan politics. And with respect to the issue of guns, I've made very clear in every meeting that I've had with Felipe, and we've actually put into practice efforts to stop illegal gun trafficking north to south. It is a difficult task, but it's one that we have taken very seriously and taken some unprecedented steps. We will continue to coordinate closely with the Mexican government because we recognize the toll that it's taken with respect to families and innocent individuals inside of Mexico. And this is part of our broader comprehensive cooperation in weakening the grip of narco trafficking within Mexico. And we recognize that we have a responsibility to reduce demand for drugs, that we have a responsibility to make sure that not only guns but also bulk cash isn't flowing into Mexico. And I obviously, President Calderon takes very seriously his responsibilities to apply effective law enforcement within Mexico. And I think he's taken courageous steps to do that. So we're going to keep on partnering together in order to continue to make progress on this very important issue.
You asked me about the visa requirement. Visa requirement is the really only effective means we have in Canada today to deal with large-scale bogus refugee claims under our refugee determination system. Legislation that is being implemented, and then in fact there's legislation before Parliament to enhance those changes. That legislation will, in the future, in years to come, will give us tools other than visa requirement to deal with that particular problem. But as of today, that remains the only tool at our disposal.
Okay. And finally from...
Mark Kennedy, Post Media News.
Hello, gentlemen. I have a couple of questions on two critical issues that you were discussing today, one on trade and one on crime. On trade, Prime Minister Harper, why is Canada's position at the negotiating table on the Trans-Pacific Partnership so important to Canada? And secondly, to get us there, to be a player, are you willing to give up as a precondition our supply management system? And President Obama, you said earlier that there needs to be high standards for a country to be there. I'm wondering whether you think yet Canada has met those high standards, whether you want us to drop our traditional supply management system. And on crime, we in Canada read about the challenges that Mexico has on the drug cartels and the horrible violence that occurs down there. But perhaps it's possible that many Canadians and perhaps even Americans don't see it as affecting their lives. Perhaps it doesn't affect their communities. So on that issue, why do you three gentlemen think that a three-country coordinated approach is necessary to protect our citizens? And Prime Minister, I think you being the only person that can speak both English and French, if you can do that, please.
Sure. First of all, in response to the question on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this is our desire to be part of that negotiation is part of Canada's ambitious trade agenda. As you know, we are currently in negotiations with over 50 countries around the world, including the European Union and Japan and India. So this was obviously a logical extension of our desire, the desire of our government to dramatically broaden our free trade relationships around the world. You know, Canada's position on Trans-Pacific Partnership is the same as our position in any trade negotiation. We expect to negotiate and debate all manner of issues, and we seek ambitious outcomes to free trade agreements. In those negotiations, of course, you know, Canada will attempt to promote and to defend Canada's interests, not just across the economy, but in individual sectors as well. On the question of security, look, the security problems are the security challenge, particularly around around the drug trade, is a serious regional problem throughout our hemisphere that has real impacts. You know, not the kind of governance and security impacts we see maybe in Central America and the Caribbean and elsewhere, but has real serious impacts on the health and safety of communities in our country as well. And as these criminal networks are transnational, it's important that our attempts to fight them be equally transnational, and that's why we work together on these initiatives. Pour la question du partenariat transpacifique, le Canada cherche à se joindre à ces discussions à cause de notre programme ambitieux envers le libre-échange à travers le monde. Nous sommes en discussion avec plus de 50 pays, y compris l'Union européenne, l'Inde, le Japon, et c'est une partie naturelle de notre ambition de diversifier nos liens de libre-échange pour spécifiques des négociations. Évidemment, ce sont des choses qu'on discute à la table. Nous croyons que nous pouvons atteindre les ambitions de ce partenariat. Nous avons examiné le document produit par ce partenariat et nous pouvons atteindre ces objectifs. Mais dans toutes les discussions, c'est naturel pour un pays de défendre, promouvoir pas seulement les intérêts de l'économie globale de notre pays, mais évidemment de nos secteurs aussi. Pour la question de sécurité dans l'hémisphère, des menaces de sécurité causées plus particulièrement par le commerce des drogues est un problème qui touche à toutes nos communautés, peut-être pas avec la même violence et les mêmes menaces à la gouvernance que dans d'autres pays de l'Amérique centrale, par exemple, mais ils sont des préoccupations sérieuses quand même. Et ces réseaux qui poursuivent de telles activités sont des réseaux transnationaux, et c'est essentiel qu'on agisse d'une façon transnationale pour les combattre. Et c'est la raison pour laquelle nous participons dans de telles initiatives.
Well, with respect to the TPP, as is true of any process of arriving at a trade agreement, every country that's participating is going to have to make some modifications. You know, that's inherent in the process, because each of our countries have their own idiosyncrasies. Certain industries that have in the past been protected, certain practices that may be unique to that country, but end up creating disadvantages for businesses from other countries. And so it's a process of everybody making adjustments. I don't think Canada would be unique in that. Are there areas where we'd like to see some changes in terms of Canadian practices? Of course. I assure you that Canada will have some complaints directed at us, and every member of the Trans-Pacific Partnership eventually would have to make some modifications in order to accommodate the larger interest of growing the overall economy and expanding trade and ultimately jobs. So I don't anticipate that there's something unique about Canada that wouldn't be true for any of the other aspirants to forming this Trans-Pacific Partnership. With respect to transnational drug trade, first and foremost, I think we should be concerned about what's happening in Mexico and Central America, because when you have innocent families and women and children who are being gunned down on the streets, that should be everybody's problem, not just our problem, not just their problem. There's a sense of neighborly regard and concern that has to be part of our calculus and our foreign policy. But more practically, the United States shares a border with Mexico. If you have this kind of violence and the power of the drug trade as a whole expanding in countries that are so closely affiliated with us, in Central American countries, if you start getting a larger and larger space in which they have control over serious chunks of the economy, if they're undermining institutions in these countries, that will impact our capacity to do business in these countries. It could have a spillover effect in terms of our nationals who are living in those countries, tourists that are visiting these countries. It can have a deteriorating effect overall on the nature of our relationship, and that's something that we have to pay attention to. And as I said, I think the Mexican government has taken this very seriously at great cost to itself. We have an obligation to take it just as seriously, in part because we are the ultimate destination for a large chunk of this market. And that, you know, Stephen and I were trading notes in places like the United States and Canada. This is not just an issue of that traditionally was very urban. This is disseminated across our communities. And you go into rural communities and you've got methamphetamine sales that are devastating, young and old alike. And some of that is originally sourced in Mexico. And so even in the remotest, most isolated parts of Canada or the United States, they're being impacted by this drug trade, and we've got to work cooperatively in order to deal with it.
Déjenme plantearlo desde otra perspectiva.
And I'd like to look at it from another standpoint. The security of North America is absolutely tied to each of its member states. There cannot be full security in this country or in Canada or in Mexico if we do not have a system that actually enables the cooperation mechanisms to act in facing threats that have no borders, that are transnational by their very nature. And these are threats that are not just tied into drug trafficking, which is transnational, of course. And I'll give you two examples of success stories that I was mentioning this morning. One, the attempt to take to Mexico one of the children of Gaddafi, one of Gaddafi's children. This implied an international and very North American operation because it was headed up by a Canadian businesswoman who hired an American company, and which hired in turn Mexican pilots and counterfeiters. And this multinational operation would not have been avoided without the international security mechanisms that we didn't have before, but that now we have. Also, being able to avoid the assassination of the Saudi ambassador here in Washington would not have been possible without the mechanisms of cooperation that we have today. So thinking that what happens in Mexico doesn't have anything to do with the security of the citizens of this country or of any other citizen of North America is a mistake. We have to understand that we are all tied to one another. Now, security understood in the regional sense, in order to understand that, we have to understand where the greatest threats to security actually lay. The United States has a clear idea of its security priorities, its the threats of terrorism, of international terrorism, terrible attacks on the U.S. people. Another threat clearly is in the power of transnational organized crime, which I insist is not crime or organizations that are strictly Mexican in nature. They don't have a nationality and they don't operate in just one country. They're probably operating right here in this city. In Washington, for instance, the number of homicides per 100,000 inhabitants is higher by 10, more than 10 or 20, than the largest number in any of the big cities in Mexico. These are international organizations that have a growing destructive capacity that act well beyond borders and threaten anyone, anywhere. It is true, the efforts that we undertake clearly make it possible to contain that threat and to prevent it from acting in society, not just in the United States or Canada, but even in Mexico. And that explains why, for instance, despite the perception of my country, last year 23 million tourists came to our country by plane, plus another 7 million in cruise ships, plus another 50 million who crossed the border, the land borders. So that's also why there are 2 million Mexicans living comfortably in Mexico, and many more living also here who came to visit us here, wanted to see us in that White House. And that's also why 1.6 million Canadians come to Mexico every year. So that's 5% of the Canadian population that travels to Mexico every year. And that also explains why, despite the fact that a state such as Texas recommends that none of its young people should travel to anywhere in Mexico, that's why there are hundreds of thousands of young Texans who go to Mexico, enjoy it, and why we haven't seen one single incident with U.S. spring breakers in Mexico this past spring, for instance. A great concern because these are multinational criminal organizations, and the mechanisms, of course, to face them, to defeat them, have to be multinational. In addition to the expressions of solidarity of President Obama, who says that he cannot stand aside from the expressions of threat that is facing a neighbor of his. The vulnerability from an institutional point of view in Mexico and Central America is an issue that also impacts and jeopardizes all of the citizens of North America.
Thank you very much, everyone.
People in America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
Hey, Mr. Politician, living on that hill. Living in that lap of luxury, on We the People's Bill. Don't have a clock of a tyranny. For if we don't, then who will do it for ourselves? And how about our children? What kind of future will we leave them? And if we won't, we'll wake up, slaves on the global plantation, calling for a revolution, calling for it now. It doesn't seem our constitution, why we still got Catholic guns in our hands. Calling for a revolution, calling for it now. It's time to save our constitution. Why we still got the guns in our hands? Why we still got the guns? Still got the guns in our hands.
Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio. Up next is See the Power in You, Healthy Children in a Toxic World is our subject on Mondays. And so we will be with you just after this short commercial message. Stay tuned.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available, committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam express essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Well, welcome to See the Power in You. With me and my lovely co-host, Miss Cookie. How are you today, Cookie?
Well, very, very good. It's a beautiful day here in Wisconsin. The sun is out, little cold and a little windy, but it's in the 30s, and that's much better than being in the teens or the single digits. And the Packers won, so we're doing great. And sorry about you Vikings. You won the week before, so we balanced off okay.
Excellent.
I'm kind of like you, Cheryl. When I watch a game, I am happy for whoever wins and whoever makes a touchdown, and I cheer for both sides, but, you know, it makes my significant other a little crazy.
Yeah, rooting for whoever has the ball can make an avid fan a little crazy.
And then, of course, I talked to the television. Now, that wasn't very nice. You shouldn't do that. Oh, well, that was uncalled for.
You know? Just talk to them. That's funny. Okay, well, I kind of came across something today that stimulated me to, you know, bring up the topic today. The article was Google causing children to be brain dead. you know, and I have this thing going on. I'm torn a little bit because I see the advantages of having the internet for children and having tons and tons of knowledge at their fingertips. And then I see disadvantages of it as well. So that's kind of the discussion I wanted to have today on our program, Healthy Children in a Toxic World. That's kind of what we focus on Mondays. And hopefully next week, Miss Granny Goodfoods will be back with us and pull us back into some of those tougher topics. This article, you know, was written by Great Britain's one of their most successful inventors, because he says at the age of like 5 years old, he was already beginning to make his first invention. I think that's kind of an unusual child. Do you have creative children, Cookie?
I feel they are, but they're not. They're creative in their areas and their expertise, and they love doing the things that they do. So I guess I do, but I also know that they are, at least two of them are really, really balanced in their spirituality and balanced in their feelings and emotions too, you know.
Well, one of the concerns is that, you know, children just spend far too much time sitting in front of a computer screen instead of out living their life and being involved with other humans. Do you know what a Meccano model construction kit is?
No, I don't. Mm-mm.
It's one that contains like gears and bands to pull the gears together, and then little motors and wheels and all these kinds of things, so that children can build things, kind of like an Erector set, only, you know, more surrounding the idea of gears and motorized types of projects.
Well, it sounds very exciting for a child.
Yeah. It seems like
to me, Cheryl, it comes down to children. You know, I don't know. I had three children. I don't know how many you had. Two?
Two. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But my three children are also different, and one works with his hands. The other one works with his brain, and the other one works with her hands and her brain. So, you know, it's kind of like they're all so different. And, you know, the thing is, I can see where computers are so awesome for children, to be able to have knowledge right at their fingertips and not to be, you know, carrying around big, huge encyclopedias. And, you know, by using more of our senses, such as hearing and eyesight and fingers, and being able to see something, observe something, yet to be able to hear it, and then to be able to ask a question and get input and output is awesome. And we know that children from, you know, like a year and a half to 5 years of age, that is their most intelligent time, when they can absorb things. They're like a sponge. And I know children that have learned 2-3 languages at that period of time, when their parents were able to teach them 2-3 languages, because maybe they were gifted in that area and so they had other abilities. But, you know, you're talking about parents that usually are not working and have time to spend around the clock with their children, filling up that empty vacuum space of their brain with all this good knowledge and wisdom. And, of course, the more the parents put in and make it fun and make it enjoyable and not a job, make it exciting, then the children even absorb more, because then there's no fear and they're always willing to explore and find things out. But everything else is always balanced, and the problem is we're so off balance, because people just don't, we're very addictive, compulsive people, where we are very competitive, and we're in the physical body more than we're in the mental body.
Well, I, you know, from when I talked to my grandson, he's 15, and talked to him about school and, you know, his opportunities in school and the fact that, you know, if he wanted to know something, he could walk into the office and turn the computer on. He didn't have to wait until the library was open and, you know, take the bike down to the library like we used to do when we were kids. But then again, you know, he doesn't take his bike and go to the library.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's these disadvantages along with the advantages. And I'm hoping that our listeners will call in and express their views. What do you think? Is the internet good for children? What are the advantages and disadvantages that you see? And we'd love to have you share your opinions with us. 347-324-3704. Boy, my brain just went on automatic pilot there for a second. Oh, my goodness.
Now, you know, if you're talking about, you know, information and education, it's awesome, but I like this one commercial on television, and I think I had mentioned it to you before, where this guy is working on his car and some insurance claim or something like that, and a girl comes out of his apartment building and says, "What are you doing?" And he proceeds to tell her that he's got some kind of an app on his phone where he can contact his insurance company and put in a claim and show a picture of his damage. And this girl says to him something about the internet, and he said, "Who told you that?" And she said she had learned it on the internet. And he said, "Well, everything on the internet isn't truthful, you know." And she goes, "Oh, no, that's not true, because everything on the internet is truthful." And so the thing is, you know, people have to understand that 50% of the stuff on the internet isn't truthful either, you know what I mean? Because it's based upon personalities and humans and input, and some of the stuff on the internet is not correct.
Right. You have to be just as discerning with things that are on the internet as any place else, and probably a little bit more so.
Right. But when you look at our human bodies actually work like the internet does. We have a left brain that has an ego, and it's attached to the earth and our forefathers, which would be Adam and Eve, which inherited sin. And our left brain will give us input of information in our brain, in our thought process, where half of the thoughts that we think are not correct. In other words, we don't have to listen to everything our brain comes up with, because a lot of times the stimuli the brain puts out is from in a past experience or information that it might have picked up that was false, or somebody told them something and they believed it, or because of the fact they have some fears or negativities in their body, and so their body is thinking negative or trying to cause trauma and drama. And so our left brain isn't, even though we want to say it's logical and that it's educated, our left brain a lot of times likes to cause a lot of trouble. It's almost like a soap opera. And so the thing is, you know, on the internet, you have that also. Just because there's a whole mess of stuff out there doesn't mean it's necessarily true. So you really have to, like you said, do your research, check it out, and see. And then it helps you to become more balanced and well-rounded because of the fact that you did your research on the pros and the cons of everything.
Right. Well, the little kids this year for Christmas got something called a meep, which I didn't even know that there was such a thing, but it's a little handheld screen And they can take on it and play games on it, and they can make little videos and that sort of thing. And when I first saw that, when they first brought it home, I thought, oh, my gosh, here we go, putting the 4-year-old and the 5-year-old with their faces in another screen, because they already have the computer, they already have the TV, the VCR, and the Wii, and the Netflix, and everything else like that. And I was there for almost 4 days with them after they came back from their trip. And I was kind of happy to see that, you know, I think Wilco only picked it up twice, and I don't know that Micah picked it up more than once while I was there. So it wasn't terribly intriguing to the smaller children. So that made me feel a little better. They were much more interested in playing games with me, or Wilk and I painted while we were there. And
I guess the negative, I don't know that much about computers and stuff, but the negative that I would see is the fact that we are electromagnetic, and when we are around electricity and we're around high-powered equipment, it affects our whole nervous system, and it affects our bodies, and it energizes our bodies so that we're overstimulated to the point where our bodies are like high-wired. And when we are high-wired, it's very, very hard as a human being to let go and let God. In other words, let go to go into the stillness, because the stillness is where we want to be. And the problem is if a person does not know how to quiet their mind, or does not know how to calm their mind, or does not know how to go into the stillness, then it's very difficult for them to get a good night's sleep. And a lot of people are so high-wired that their brain is going 1040 like the computer. And when they're supposed to be going to sleep at night, a lot of times it's very hard for them to unwind, to calm down, to let the nervous system relax, and to let go. And that's why there's so many problems with autoimmune problems, because that's a nervous disorder, which has to do with all these high-frequency electromagnetic stuff that we're being bombarded with.
Yeah. Well, and you said high-powered equipment. You know, people don't think about the fact that their laptop or their iPhone is a high-powered piece of equipment. Just because it's small and efficient and all that kind of stuff doesn't take away from the fact that it's a high-powered piece of equipment.
And if we're lacking water, then it affects our physical bodies, and that's why we have so many problems with children with ADHD and ADD and bipolar and mental problems, because it affects the mind, and especially if you're not drinking a lot of water, which a lot of youth today don't drink a lot of water because they're drinking pop and everything else. And then usually a lot of times the pop they're drinking has so much sugar aspartame in, and then it affects even more their physical bodies where they're really high-wired. And like I said, then they get crabby and ornery and kind of snippy and snotty because they can't relax, and they're bursting. They actually feel like they're going to burst, kind of like they're under attack. And so when they start feeling like they're under attack and they don't know how to relax, then what ends up happening is they get anxious or get anxiety problems, and maybe, you know, temper tantrums or talking back or throwing things or angry or upset. And that's all from not allowing to go into the right brain, where you need to go into the stillness or the quietness, where you need to just, you don't think anything and you go into the empty space. And what I mean by that is when Brother Gregory talks about this string effect, and in between the string, the power is actually in between the two points. Think of it this way: where there's space, that's the emptiness, and that's where the power is. And in order to get that power, you have to go into that empty space to be able to absorb it, but you don't go in there thinking anything. You just allow and let go, and you take a couple deep breaths and exhale. So if your house is, like, cluttered and has a lot of junk around and you're a hoarder, let's say to speak, you have no empty space in your house. If you have a big house and there's a lot of empty space and everything's clean and neat, then you have more space to be able to pick up the power. And that's why a lot of people come in, if they come into a house with big rooms and a lot of empty space and everything's organized, it's kind of breathtaking. Well, you can think of it also when you go up into a mountain and you overlook a valley area and you see the sky and you see the empty space and you smell the trees and you feel the environment. That's where the energy is. It's in that empty space. So likewise in our brain, our empty space, if we go into it on a daily basis, even for 30 seconds or a minute, and don't think of anything and just take deep breaths and exhale and go into that empty space and just allow and let go, it revitalizes our body. But the problem is if you're always thinking, always doing, always being wired up from electromagnetic fields, then you don't know how to relax and you don't know how to calm the nerves and you don't know how to let go and you don't know how to sleep at night so that you can revitalize the body. And so that's why we're having more youths come up with more illnesses at early ages because of that.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, we've got a caller trying to call in, and oh, let me see if I can,
Oh, I heard it.
Heard it?
Hi, this is Life in the USA. How are you doing?
Hi, honey. How are you? Thanks for calling in.
Very good. Actually, I started to call you guys when you asked a question about children and the value of the internet. Well, I have twins, and they went from public. I actually have homeschooled them for 3 years, from very early age till third grade, and when they went to a public school for 2 years, and they were bored. They were got in trouble, and now they are in a charter school. Now in charter school, one of them, he's really good in math, and he got in trouble because he was bored. They didn't challenge him enough, so I told him, take some advanced math. So they gave him in school a booklet to do advanced math for the sixth grade, and that was not enough for him. So he went to Khan Academy online, and I found him one day learning trigonometry. And, you know, he's 12 years old. You know what I mean? And as I said, I grew up in Czechoslovakia, so I have no idea what grade children learn trigonometry over here. We learned it in the seventh grade. But, you know, it is advanced math as far as I, you know, have heard over here.
Yes, it is.
You know, but with Khan Academy, you have to be also very careful, like you have pointed out. You know, there is good stuff and there is the bad stuff, and how do you know which information is correct and which one is not? Well, you cannot take, if you're looking for something, let's say U.S. history, you will find, you have to look for different sources. You cannot only pick Wikipedia, for example, and just take this for granted as that's, you know, the set in stone. You have to pick and pluck, and you have to come to your own conclusions many times, because, and specifically history is really distorted depending on which political climate we live in. And I can contest this because I grew up in a communist country, and You have no idea what we've learned about the capitalism, how bad guys you are over here, how you rob of the backs of the poor people who work for the rich people. You know, it was distorted. It really was. And I'm sure you probably had distorted information about communism, you know, being living over here and learning or from the textbooks what it's like to be in a communist country. So that's my take, my two cents.
Well,
awesome.
It sounds like you had an awesome experience with your child being able to advance himself significantly with the use of the Internet.
Yeah, and so we really have to be careful. We really have to watch very carefully what you're reading.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that.
I was going to say, just from her comment, what I like about the fact this lady is mentioning that she is open and yet at the same time balances things off by looking at it from different points of view, even with her experiences, allowing to observe and check things out, which is what we need to have our children do, not tell them what to think or what to believe, but give them options of all different sides of issue to check things out before making a decision. And then if they do make a decision, see how that works for them. And if it doesn't work for them, then find a different solution for them. And I think it's awesome that, you know, she might have a little mathematician on her hands, and, you know, he's got these wonderful qualities, and she's willing to work with those to let him excel and be in his own power. So that's awesome.
Yeah, and if I can end my call with this thought, when I was growing up, my dad told me, if you want to fight your enemies, you have to learn about your enemies. So basically, if, you know, everybody's bashing Obama, well, you really have to learn about a man to know him and to know how to go and deal with the situation. And same thing with any other thing. You cannot just lift your hands up and say, that's it, I'm not interested, I give up. If you want to know, you have to go forward, you have to learn about it. Whether it's good or bad, you really have to find information. And that's, you know, what basically Bible says, my people will perish without for lack of knowledge. And we have to keep going and learning and seeking the truth. All right, girls, I'll let you go. Thank you for my call. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling. And taking it one step further, even taking in that information and knowing about your enemy, what is your purpose? Is your purpose to make set peace? Is your purpose to show love? Is your purpose to show understanding? Or is your purpose to kill? You know what I mean? What is our real purpose in life? Are we able to allow others to be themselves and yet not let it affect us? And yet if it does affect us, are we willing to negotiate and are we willing to bring peace, you know?
Mm-hmm. She brought up an interesting point about history. History's been written by the winners, not usually by the losers.
Yep. And the losers also see things from their objective, and, you know, a lot of times there's some really good things that they learned because we learn from our lessons.
Yep. Yeah, we learn from our defeats as well as our victories, that's for sure.
A lot of times our defeats help us make change, and change is good for us, especially if the change is helping us to be a better person.
Right. Okay, well, we reached the bottom of the hour, so we'll take a short commercial break here, and then we'll be back. And I have a couple other things that I'd like to talk about, and appreciate you tuning in to Freedomizer Radio. If you have any comments or questions, 347-324-3704. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much again, live. We appreciate you calling in and sharing your perspective.
Hey, guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer, for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solavay.com/freedomizer.
Hi, this is Mary Lou Van Houten, co-host and producer of Gadsden Rising on FreedomizerRadio.com. Join host Libby Gadsden and me every Monday through Thursday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk with cutting-edge guests about the truth of a variety of topics. We are 100% free speech. Gadsden Rising on Freedomizer Radio, because you can handle the truth.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again. As I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Blessings, saints of the Most High, Freedomizers, family, and friends. The Lord's humble servant, Emmanuel, here, announcing that you can now listen to the Sound Doctrine Ministry program on Sunday mornings from 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time until noon, right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network. In this format, we will have a focused topic each week from the Holy Scriptures. We brought back the Christian Update with news that is of concern to the body of Christ. Also, the Spiritual Enlightening Breakpoint Commentaries and the 2-Minute Warnings from the Colson Center. We'll have prayer, biblical studies,
the occasional guest,
take your prayer requests, and great gospel music. Join the fellowship in our chat room at freedomizerradio.com or call in at 347-324-3704. We are here for you. Blessings and peace to your home.
Sound Doctrine on freedomizerradio.com.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Well, live feed, thanks for sharing that in the chat room. Sorry, that got me a little bit shook up there. Oh, I was looking for the announcements today. Sorry, I'm a little discombobulated here today. There we go. We have some a nice announcement today for other programs that, or other things that are going on at Freedomizer Radio this week. Truth Negative has some interesting guests coming up. On Tuesday, Randy Shannon. And on Wednesday, Judith Pinkerton from Music for Life that I did a program with her last Friday. And musician Jordan Page, and on Thursday, Alan Phillips for Vaccine Rights will be here on Thursday with Proof Negative, and that Proof show is from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So thank you all for tuning in today. Any other comments or questions or just comments about children and the Internet? What are your opinions? What do you have to say? What have you seen in your own families with your own children, your own grandchildren, the value or dangers of the Internet? Interesting little story. My one of my granddaughters, and she must have been, this was a couple years ago, so 13, 14 years old. She did an internet search on spanking, and it started out very innocent, you know, about children being spanked by their parents. And ended up with her being exposed to some rather cheesy and, well, let's just say, not so nice pornographic sites. So it's very hard to regulate what's going on if you don't. I know that there are safety programs out there, and this is how my son found out about this particular incident, that they have a monitoring system, and it's an accountability program. Everything that my grandchildren go to see on their computers or under their sign-on, it's all logged. And it's not only sent to my son, but it's sent to a friend of his. The children don't even know who that friend is. It's just another person to be accountable for. And there are ways that we can protect our children. But do parents do that? Is there anyone out there who is using one of these programs? Love to hear from you and hear how that's going for you. 347-324-3704. One of the things that I saw this morning as I was, we'll leave that subject open. Please feel free to call in and share. The article was it was on the NBC website, NBC Southern California, which I found to be very kind of interesting. The Ontario Gun Show, they drew like twice as many people as they thought they were going to get at the gun show. It's the first gun show in California since the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. It seems that some 6,000 people showed up at this little gun show wanting to buy ammunition and guns. So it doesn't look like the idea that, you know, guns kill people is working. If they're trying to scare people into giving up their guns, I think it's having the absolute opposite effect. That's more than double that was expected to attend the event. Many of the national manufacturers can't keep up on ammunition and keeping their suppliers supplied. Seems there's still a lot of articles still in the news. What interested me is that this was not. I don't think that this was something that was seen on the news, on the TV. it seems to me that the big networks are starting to report alternative news on the internet. And that could be why they're still gaining such popularity, as opposed to their TV network. Do I mean fake news or real news? What are you talking about, Larry? I don't know what you're talking about. You're talking in the chat room that there's an ammo shortage because the government's buying it all up. I don't know that. I know I've heard a lot of people saying that they're having trouble getting ammunition. People don't want to give up their Second Amendment rights, that's for sure. Yeah, I heard that, Tessa. Tessa said that the Department of Homeland Security just bought. You know, and that's interesting. This is another thing about the internet. You know, people are tracking and looking at what the government is doing, what everybody is doing, and everybody's focused on what everybody is doing instead of living their lives. It scares me a little bit, Cookie.
Well, it's amazing to me how, let's say if you have a gun in your home, what is the purpose of it is for protection, and yet how many guns do you need to have and how much ammunition? Yet at the same time, do you think that you're going to have a mob come to your house and shoot you in that you need a machine gun or something, you know, yet all these people are funny. They go into fear, and when they go into fear, then they start hoarding, and then when they start hoarding, they start compressing, and it's amazing to me how many people can't afford food for their tables or pay their rent, yet they're out there buying guns and ammunition. Yet, like I said, how many guns do you need and how much ammunition you need? And yes, it is your right. You can spend your money whatever way you want and do whatever you want. But something happens like this and it becomes a major issue. And yet, you know, a lot of people have guns. A lot of people are involved in, going for target practice and doing hunting and doing things. I've been raised around it here in my area for years because it is a hunting area. And a lot of children are raised with guns, and their parents teach them how to target shoot and shoot tin cans and different things like that, you know. But it's not a game. They're taught actually how to do it, just like the precautions of riding on a snowmobile or a four-wheeler or running a lawnmower or whatever the case is. And to go into fear about this all of a sudden, it's like, you know, people are just, you know, fear is a funny thing. I just, like I said, nobody wants our rights taken away. Nobody wants us, but I wish they would be more outspoken, more outgoing, more letting their voices be put out there with logic and understanding. And then, you know, if this is something that needs to be voted upon, that they're willing to put more effort into it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Balance again. The key is balance.
He is balance. Yeah. Well, and I've been looking at those kinds of things for myself too, Cookie. You know, spending more time, you know, doing other things. This past weekend was kind of an interesting spot in my life. When I moved out to California, I had left a couple things in my son's garage, and one of them was a suitcase. And he said, "Mom, you know, we're trying to clear out the garage because we want to put they're getting Nicola, the 15-year-old, a drum set for Christmas, and they're going to put him out in the garage. I'm so excited for him. It's going to be great." But they're trying to make room, and so this big suitcase was full of photographs. So I spent a good part of 2 days going through almost every photograph that I own, from, you know, pictures of me when I was little, pictures of my children when they were little, and all the different things that I've done through my life, and all of the pictures that stimulated all of these memories. And then I think about all of those things and what I'm doing right now. And, you know, there's always room for more balance, for better balance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Reevaluate what it is that we're doing in our lives that make us happy, that make us productive, and that bring us closer to the people that are in our lives.
And you know that balance is so important, even when you think about a person learning karate or anything like that for self-defense. The purpose is to learn it, but to never have to use it, hopefully. Well, likewise with a gun, it's always good to know how to use it, but hopefully you'll never have to use it on another human being. And even people that are in, like police officers, learn all these things, but they do hope that they can go through a whole career never having to use their weapon on another human being to the extent of harming another human being. You know, law and order is the key, and balance is the key, and when somebody is out of order and dysfunctional, and I'm not saying that there's not dysfunction in sometimes order, because there's people that maybe are in the police area that are out of order too, and maybe have a drinking problem or drug problem or an ego problem or whatever, but it doesn't matter what side it is. We're talking about balance in you as a human being and controlling your feelings, your emotions, and you being balanced, you know, and learning to be able to be flexible. And when we're talking about the internet, I love people getting information, and what I'm learning on the computer so far, I just really have been enjoying. But at the same time, I don't want it ever to take the place of talking to you, Cheryl, or sitting and talking to a good friend and eyeballing them, or enjoying a meal with them and just relaxing, or a cup of coffee or tea, or when my grandkids come in or people around you and you say, "Hi, how are you today?" And you start talking to them and find out what they're up to and what they're doing and where they're going and this and that. And I see so often people that they might be on their cell phone, or they might be on their computer, or they might this, and they are multitasking and pretending they're listening to you, but they really are not paying attention. And that's where we have the problem with driving, doing 2-3 things at a time. Some people eat their meals in their car while they're on their cell phone, while they're listening to a radio, while they're driving down the road. And, you know, it's kind of like that's where I'm talking about being overwired and overstimulated. And then when they get home and they collapse in a chair,
they either are sound asleep because they're so exhausted, or they're wide awake, go, 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 going, and they don't know how to relax. And so that's where we, as human beings, need to learn balance, you know. There's nothing wrong with owning a gun and having a license and learning how to use it and defending yourself and, you know, exercising your free rights as a United States citizen. But, you know, we don't want to go the opposite way where we stockpile weapons like we're Fort Knox or something, and yet at the same time, we don't want to go out and kill 1,000 people either. That's not our intent either, you know.
Right. Well, it's a crazy world we live in, Cookie, and, you know, I think that your comments about, you know, staying balanced is it's very important. Do you have a proclamation that you can put together for us this morning?
Well, I think we could find one, I'm sure.
I bet you could. Bet you could. You're really good at doing that.
Well, I know Rich Work sure is. He's always good with balance, and he's always good with helping us to be balanced, you know.
Exactly.
I think transmuting boundaries and limitations would be a good one. Because sometimes we need to know our limits, and we also need to know balance. And so that's a good thing to be, is balanced and have limitations. So this is for all of us. And then if we have boundaries and we also know how far we like to go and how limited we are, and yet at the same time we want to be free. So from the divine love that flows within my being, all boundaries and limitations I own on all levels of my being, I now embrace in unconditional love and transmute into the divine expression of creative love. I declare that I have no boundaries or limitations and give myself permission to be all that I am, to stand in my truth in unconditional love, in non-judgment of myself and of others. I honor all others for the journey they have chosen. I choose to be the observer rather than the participant. If that is what I choose in the moment, so be it. Take a deep breath. Exhale and clap your hands. And what that means is sometimes we need to observe something to know how much we want to be involved or not be involved, how aggressive we want to get or how much we want to back off. And yet if we look things from both angles or different aspects, then we can for ourselves indicate and determine where our boundaries are or where we want to be balanced or how we want to be. We can be very fanatical about something to the point of getting ourselves sick, or we can be too relaxed on something to the point where we show no interest. But balance is the key, where we get involved to a certain extent, but then we don't get so involved that we become compulsive.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Cookie.
You're welcome.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
I hope that you all have a wonderful, blessed day. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful day, and a beautiful, wonderful new year. May all your dreams come true. See you later, Cookie.
Okay, bye-bye.
I woke up this morning and I turned on the
so I went outside. People fighting, people living, people dying, and it's all so much to think about. It's all so much to worry about, it makes me cry. Need a better perspective, need some time to reflect it, to remember how similar we all are. We all want the same thing, a chance to follow our dreams, to raise a family of love and liberty.
For this opportunity to share what I have discovered in my research. And, you know, I post a lot of things at Granny Good Food at Facebook, and I write, I send letters to the editor, and, you know, there's always the hope that there's one person listening out there that this will touch and it'll just – spark a fire, and they'll carry it on. And you know, we've got to change things, and it's up to us. You know, government, industry, they're not going to help us, and it's up to us to share with one another. So, thank you once again.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And when you just said that, it made me think of the Olympic torch runners and how they that's what we're hopefully doing here is
absolutely
one else's torch, because we can't run alone.
That's right. Well, shall we dig in?
Let's dig in, because the subject is it's hot.
It sure is. It sure is. You know, and the name of your show is See the Power in You. And this is so critical. This goes right along with your theme. You know, the power in us is sovereign power from God, because we are made in His image. And if we grasp that, we know we are not an animal, a dog or a cat or a cow to be turned into hamburger as at the will of our masters. We are sovereign, and no longer does that concept of divine right of kings apply to us, because after the atonement and Jesus bridged the gap of sin for us, He paid the price. We have the Spirit of God living within us. We can have self-government. We don't need, you know, the volumes of law to tell us to do the right thing. We have the power in us, and that's what I want you to see. And yet American law has been changed starting in 1906, and I'm going to show you this. I'm going to read from the text. You will not believe it. Well, I hope you do believe it, and I hope you do something about it. But the law has been changed across the land in state law, local law, federal law. It's all been changed to call us an animal, and it's actually the one of the planks of genocide is to dehumanize a people. So let's see. Let's start with, and I didn't come up with this on my own. I started studying the work of a man named Al Adask, A-D-A-S-K, and I would just greatly encourage our listeners to Google man or other animals. Those four words are warfare against our nation. Google man or other animals, and the name Al Adask, A-D-A-S-K, and spend days there. I have spent days and weeks reading the material and researching it and applying it. You know, I'm very active in local politics, and I've applied this. I've been able to use it. So let's go in here. You know, we wonder why we fight against GMOs. We want to get them labeled. And why in the world were they started in the first place? We wonder why raw milk is being seized and poured out in the streets of Venice. And, you know, why people like James Stewart, a good man, being arrested and taken to the dungeon in Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office and tortured. You know, why is the meat sold in your child's school cafeteria irradiated? It's filthy meat, and they irradiate it and feed it to kids. You know, why is the government outlawing medicinal herbs and medicine that truly heals, while at the same time they're lacing our food, our water with the filthiest things that are unspeakable? Vaccines. Why are they mandating vaccines that they know cause autism? There's one reason. It's because in 1906, the law was changed to include these words, man or other animals. And I'm going to go directly from the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906. It was before the FDA. It was the Bureau of Chemistry is what it was called before. It became the FDA. So the Pure Food and Drug Act, United States Statutes at Large, 59th Congress, Session 1, Chapter 3915, page 768. Here's what it says. An act, Chapter 3915, Section 6. That the term drug, as used in this act, shall include all medicines and preparations recognized in the United States Pharmacopoeia or National Formulary for internal or external use, and any substance or mixture of substances intended to be used for the cure, mitigation, or prevention of disease of either man or other animals. The term food, as used herein, shall include all articles used for food, drink, confectionery, or condiment by man or other animals, whether simple, mixed, or compound. Now, that term there, when Mr. Addis says that when he saw it, he said, surely this was some stupid grammarian that didn't know their grammar. They used that term, or other animals. Let me set the grammar stage. If I said liver or other bananas,
right.
Haven't I just quantified liver as a banana?
Okay, I got
liver,
that.
Okay, it's hard to follow on the radio, so that's why you need to see it in writing. But if I said cats or other dogs, haven't I just called a cat a dog? Or if I say liver or other bananas, I've just called liver a kind of a banana. Haven't I? Yes, I have. So if we see this term man or other animals, then we know that man is being equated to an animal.
Yes.
Okay, hang on to that. That is 1906, but that's not all. That's not all. It is in many other laws. It is in, it's found in, let's quote some other laws here. Title VII, which is the Agriculture Code of the United States, USC, one time it's found there. It's found in Title 21 six times, and in my state, Texas, and the Health and Safety Code, it's found five times. So this is not a simple grammatical error. It is intentional. It is warfare. Now, let's go to the law of the land, which is the Constitution. And actually, the organic law of the United States includes the Declaration of Independence, and that was written before the Constitution. So let's go there. Let's just read this. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And I'll stop right there. That is the opposite of man as an animal. This document declares we are created in the image of God. And because we are in the image of God, we are equal. There is no man that is greater than another. We are equal. And that government is to be our servant. This document, I just love it. And I'm getting all excited here.
I can feel it.
Oh, yeah. You know, before the United States, the founding of America was unique in the history of the world. For one thing, it did several things. It undid the divine right of kings. Before this document, this Declaration of Independence was written, before that, man in England, in other monarchies, they believed that the king had all the power. Only God spoke to the king, and what the king said was absolutely the final law, and it was for them. But what they don't understand is that as man read the Bible, the Word of God, and he became to be conformed to the image of God, and that law got in his heart, and he became self-governed. God dealt with man directly, not just through the king. So, you know, it was a direct threat to the king, and he wanted to keep his power, and that's been the struggle for these last several thousand years is, you know, man overcoming the king spirit. Let's go back over here. So this document undid the divine right of kings and started the concept that man can govern himself because he has a relationship with God and is ruled by his spirit in his heart. Several things that I just read in the Declaration of Independence that happens here. The principle is that government is to be our servant, not our master. that the role of the ruler's power is to maintain and guard the sacred trust of we the people. The power is in us, we the sovereigns. And that rights come from God, not from man, that they are given to us when we are born, because we're not born collectively, we are born individually. So we get our rights from God when we are born individually, and they can't be taken away because they're not given by man, but God himself. And that these rights are given to us because we are the crowning glory of God's creation. You know, if you read the in Genesis, and God said, "Let us make man in our image," and he gave us the right to rule over. He gave us that dominion mandate to rule over the fish and the birds and the cattle of the land. And we are sovereign in this representative government. The government has the right to preserve and to protect our sovereign rights to rule ourselves according to God's law. And when you read that man or other animals, those four words, that is a coup, it's warfare, it is an attack directly on the foundation of law in this United States. And it names us as an animal. It's blasphemy, and it is wrong, and that is the way the people in our government, the rulers, are taking control over us. They're treating us like animals. And until we claim, "I do not consent," and stand up and tell, you know, the powers that be, "I am standing on my rights, my unalienable rights that you can't take away, because I am made in the image of God, and I am not an animal, and I claim my rights." That is our power. That is the nexus, the crux. The whole foundation of our power is standing on that presupposition, that worldview. So if we consent, if we just allow these people to, you know, to continue their worldview of man as an animal, they can do anything with us. You know, you can take a cow and you can turn it into hamburger or leather. Anything you want, because that animal, it doesn't have a soul. It's, you know, we have souls, and we have the right to rule ourselves. So I'm going to take a break now and let you catch my breath. And I know this is a lot to grasp, but it's important.
It's very important. And when you said that, it's like so many things became perfectly clear.
Yes, yes. Yes, that's exactly what my prayer is.
Exactly. It's like this is why we are having to fight so hard, and why we're if we don't know this information, we're at a disadvantage.
Exactly. And it's a war of words. They didn't use bullets or guns to take away our rights to call us an animal. They used four words. That's it, four words. And that, if you understand that concept, that worldview, you will understand not only why we can't get GMOs out of our food, why we can't get fluoride out of our water, why our food has, you know, aspartame in it. You will understand the prison system. You will understand Homeland Security, because animals need to be watched over. They need to be corralled. You understand everything that's going on, because they have attacked the foundation with these four words, man or other animals. They have dehumanized us. They have started a war of genocide against the men created in God's image. It started in 1906, and here we are 106 years later, and look where we are.
A mess.
A mess. Yes, and we're being treated like animals. You know, if you have an animal, you know, we have four Dobermans, and I tell you, they're pampered. They get ground quail frames, and they get good stuff. But lots of people, they just go down to Walmart and get a bag of Old Roy, and they can feed that animal anything they want, regardless if it's, you know, causes disease, or if it dies, hey, they'll just get another dog. But that's how we are being viewed, because... Ooh, let me touch on another concept here.
Okay.
If man is sovereign, and we are ruled by the Spirit of God, and we government serves us because we are men of goodwill. What kind of government do men who are not of goodwill, what kind of government do they look to for their foundational law, the corporation? The corporation has undone everything of liberty. The corporation is evil, it's vile, because it is fictional. And the corporation, the corporate law, it's an entity unto itself. And there are 3 years that are important to remember how this transition happened and how they are implementing this worldview that man is an animal. This is how they're doing it, by corporate law. 1861, Congress adjourned sine die. That means they adjourned without another day to meet. It was the beginning of the War of Northern Aggression. Some people call it the Civil War. So I guess I'm exposing my view here. So 1861, Congress adjourned. Congress has not reconvened. It is still a de facto Congress. They are still representatives of the corporation. We do not have a de jure Congress. 1868, the 14th Amendment came along, called the Radical Republicans got in after the Civil War. They passed the Civil War amendments. The 14th Amendment created the federal person. A person is a corporation. It's a fiction. And so it didn't free the slaves. It made us all slaves on the federal plantation, some have said. And then in 1871, the United States Corporation was actually created. The Republic has been set on the back burner. The Republic that is governed by the Declaration, the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, the Northwest Ordinance of 1789, those are the organic laws of the United States that sets the foundation of all law. And that has been set on the back burner. So now we are a corporation. And a fiction. So we've been created as a fiction. The government is a fiction. And then, of course, in the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act, and it's just gotten worse. You know, Nixon created the war on drugs. Well, it's not a war on drugs. It's a war on people. And it's a pseudo war. You know, if people want to do marijuana, that is their sovereign right. It's a medicinal herb. The government, it's a fake war, and we could go into that some other time. Those 4 years, the 3 years that set up the premise, and then the fourth year was 1906 with the Pure Food and Drug Act. That was the war that has lost the battle, and we are living in a time when we are treated as chattel.
Well, and you know that has been that phrase has been bantered around an awful lot, that we're treated as chattel, and this puts it in black and white. Yes, we are.
Yes, it's the proof. It's the textual proof that we are now declared by law to be chattel. Here it is. Here it is. You know, take it and run with it, and you know, claim your right. You know, if I said, you know, liver or other bananas, and if you agree with me, then I have power over you because you've agreed with that lie. Well, here's the good news. At any time, you can say, you're crazy. A liver is not another banana, or a dog is not another cat. You can say, wait a minute, reality says this. And you can claim your rights. Just because these liars and thieves and murderers have declared us to be animals, it doesn't mean that it's true. But if they can get us to agree with them, then it's by contract, oh, okay, and we've given them power over us.
I gotta stop and breathe because
I know. It's almost what? It's such an A-bomb of truth, you know. But it's power, and I'm just so excited that I can share this on your show. That it's you know, it goes right along with what your theme is. And it's like empowering people to say, wait a minute, no, I don't agree with this. I am not an animal. I am the crowning glory of God's creation. And we have that power right here in the Declaration of Independence. Let me continue where I stopped.
Okay.
That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such forms as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. You know, if our government looks at us as an animal, we are not safe at all, nor can we have happiness. And happiness, the founders had thought about writing in property instead of that word happiness, and I don't know what made them change their mind. But anyway, the right to own property is foundational to being a man created in God's image. Animals don't own property. And this will get off on a tangent not related to food, but it's a political thing. But the whole focus of Agenda 21, United Nations, the whole focus of the New World Order is to deny our right as made in the image of God to own property. And we can talk about that some other time. But here it is in the Declaration, our founding documents. We have the right to abolish any form of government that denies our rights to govern ourselves, and if that government becomes destructive and it doesn't protect those rights, we have the right to abolish that.
That's a big job.
It is a big job, but how do we start? We start with our own lives. We start,
right,
you know, on the personal level. And, you know, I hope that none of us are called in before courts or anything, but if we are, like Al Addis, the fellow that I've been studying his work, the state of Texas got a hold of him. He owned a company that had leased some furniture to the company that was making colloidal silver. And the Texas Attorney General said, oh, that colloidal silver is a drug, and you're all busted. And so because he was involved in it through leasing the furniture, he was drawn into the battle, and they were charging him something like $25,000 a day fine. And this went on for 6 years with the battle with the state of Texas. And so Mr. Addis, being one of the most brilliant people I've ever studied, he went to the drug law, and he saw this for himself. And like I said, he saw that term, man or other animals, and he gives glory to God. He said, you know, God just showed this to him, and he started looking at it in depth. He started comparing it to what the organic law of the United States really says, where our rights really come from, and he was appalled. And he stood his ground, and he went in with that argument. And even though the state of Texas, I mean, they had like $1 million that they could have collected. They could have put him in jail, and they would have made more money on people in jail. Anyway, they threw it out because they didn't want it to go to court, because if this comes to court and it's documented, oh my gosh, the rug is pulled out, the game is up, the man behind the curtain is standing there stark naked, and they have nothing else to go on because the people know the truth. So they threw this out because he had the truth. And I am so convinced in my heart that if any one of us is called into court or have some kind of battle with this fictional corporation that, you know, it's a straw man corporation called government, if we stand on the truth that we are made in the image of God, we have won the battle. We have won.
Excellent. Okay, well, okay. We are at the bottom of the hour, and we need to take our commercial break. So let's do that. If you're listening to FreedomizerRadio.com, I know that there are people out there who know about this. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to call. And that number is 347 424-3704. And I will be giving that number again after the break. So, we will be back in just a few minutes with a few words from our sponsors. And I'm looking for some new sponsors. Okay, that call-in number again is 347-324-3704. And if you'd like to make a comment or you have a question, just press 1 on your handset and we'll know that you would like to speak with us. As for the GMO video contest, go to freedomizerradio.com and at the very top of the page next to the call-in number, you'll find the info button for our contest. And just know that we're doing this wonderful little kickoff on this Saturday with a special interview. Sky, he's 13 years old, and he has something to say about GMOs, and we would love for you to join us. That's this Saturday at 4 p.m. Pacific time. So, Donna, this subject just, I mean, the whole idea, everything that you've talked about, I mean, I've heard little bits and pieces for the past, well, probably for a little over a year. We had a wonderful interview with L.B. Bork. He wrote The Red Amendment. Have you read that book?
No, I haven't.
Okay. His website is PacNLaw, PacNLaw, I believe. And
the Red Amendment.
The Red Amendment, yes. And he basically talks about how it was that 13th Amendment that got us messed up.
Well, the 14th Amendment is the one that made us a federal slave.
14th, okay, 14th Amendment, okay. I got my numbers mixed up.
That's okay. There's the whole radical Republicans after the Civil War, they passed several amendments, and that whole package has the 13th Amendment now was the one that's the missing amendment that said no lawyer could be a holder of a public office, if I remember right. So does he talk about that, or is it the 14th Amendment person?
It's the 14th Amendment person.
Oh, okay,
yes.
So that is the 14th. Okay, well, that sounds
right.
Like a really good book to get.
Excellent book, and I would like to have, based on this conversation, I think that, you know, I've listened to LB several times. He's been on Freedomizer Radio a number of times and was a consultant on one of our programs last year, and I had a hard time catching everything, but when you started talking today and you said those four words, it just amazed me. I mean, it's like a lot of things that I've been learning over the past year just became crystal clear. I'm going to post a link in the chat room for anyone who's interested in going and checking out the Red Amendment, because it's a wonderful read. And LB has put together that particular website, and it's full of information. He also teaches you how to get out of the system if you're interested in getting out of the federal system. So that's an awesome book.
Well, we have to do that. We cannot. Be in a system that declares us to be an animal, because they will get suicidal. They can kill us at any time. They can contaminate our food, our water, because if we consent that we are an animal, we've given them the power over us. You know, and Jesus came to set the captives free. And his last words at the cross, tetelestai, it is finished. And that in the Greek, it's a term that means paid in full. We are no longer slaves. We are no longer to be slaves to other men. We are to be the bondservant of God himself. And to agree that this government would be able to declare us as an animal, they have declared war. And, you know, I'm of Celtic extraction. And my Celtic blood just boils over to think that they would have the arrogance, the chutzpah, to do that. And like you, when I read the Mr. Adisk's work, the lights went on. It's like, this is it. This is it. This is big. This is bigger than Roe versus Wade. This is bigger than the civil rights movement. I mean, this is big because it's the whole foundation.
Okay, so where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? We've got this great realization of how they are manipulating. Now, how do we step out of that? What was Mr. Addis' solution?
Well, he stayed out of jail and he saved his financial worth by claiming this. And so I'm putting this out. If any of us are called into court or if we have dealings with the government that says, you know, they try to take our wealth, we need to stand on these principles. And I think we need to have we need to get back to the republic. And I know there's a move in Texas, you know, restore the republic. We need to get Congress sitting back as a de jure Congress and eliminate this fiction called the United States Corporation, you know, all capital letters. We need to get back and operate in that. And, you know, I'm in the same boat as everybody else. You know, I'm struggling to find out how do we apply this. And it's very frustrating to have this information and know the truth. Okay, what good is truth if we can't act on it? So how do we do it? What do we do? And I'm hoping that by sharing this, others will come forth and say, hey, I've got a piece of that puzzle. You know, we all see in part, and we're all in this together, and I think we all have to get out of it together. You know, so there's got to be, you know, answers out there somewhere.
There does.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, this is so huge because I'm feeling a sense of clarity. I don't know what to do with it just yet.
Yeah, well, I'm using it, you know, I'm very active in local politics, and Agenda 21 has come in to Lockhart, and the federal government has taken over control of the main corridor going through town through a grant we got called Sustainable Places Project. So I'm using it in that way, and I'm educating and telling people. And, you know, we each have to make a decision. Either you come out of the darkness into the light, you either take the red pill or the blue pill, okay? And I see that as a very important thing to do, is to tell people the truth. And because we are sovereign, we can't force people to accept the truth. They have to make that decision. But our job is to say, here it is. You have to choose. And if they choose to stay in deception, you know, then God's going to deal with them. But if they choose to come out and into the light, then you know, as we all do that, I just think there are going to be some good things that happen. So that's where I am now, and I just feel this urgency to tell people, and they have to make that decision. And I don't know, do you feel that too? Do you feel that there's just an urgency to get this truth out so that people have the opportunity to say, you know what, that rings true. It rings true in my spirit. You know, do you feel that?
I do. I do feel that. And I've got, I went out and I looked for Al Addis. And I found a couple links that I'm going to post in the chat room. I hope that, you know, if you're hanging around the chat room, you can come and pick those up. Go and do a search on that information. Al Addisk.
Yes, and you know he's in Texas. I think he's up in Dallas in that area. He may be willing to come on and do a far better job of explaining his situation than I have. And I'm his student. You know, I read everything he puts out, and so he would be a far better source. I mean, you'd get it straight from him of how he came to the realization and saw this for himself, and so he would be a great guest to have on if he would.
Absolutely. Well, we'll put that. We're planting that seed right now, Donna.
Yes.
It's you or me, and we're going to find a way to get him on the radio show. That sounds like that's just going to be a task we'll set for.
Good. Good. And, you know, all you can do is plant a seed, and then there's a crop, and I just pray that it would bear good fruit, 30, 60, and 100-fold, because the truth does not return void. We put that truth out there, it will bear a good crop. So that's our job in these days, is just telling the truth. And, you know, there's a verse in Thessalonians that I just cling to, and you know, it gets disappointing when you tell people, you know, aspartame is going to fry your brain, it's going to cause brain tumors, and they just look at you and continue sucking the stuff up. So what do you do when you've told people and they just continue to embrace the lie? And God showed me this, and it just gives me comfort. And it says, for this reason, God will send upon them a deluding influence so that they might believe what is false, in order that they all may be judged who did not believe the truth but took pleasure in wickedness. You know, there comes a time if you reject the truth, there's the judgment that has to come. So it's my prayer that people would embrace the truth in whatever form it comes to them, embrace that truth in little and big ways. And that is the need of the hour in this time we're in, is to embrace the truth.
Okay. Well, Cookie, I see
yeah.
that you put your hand up, and you want to say something, and I can feel your energy.
Well, I just want to thank Donna for, oh, she's got such a great brain, and she loves the law and puts all this good information out there. I just love brains like that. I wish I had one that was similar. But anyways, I just want to tell her that it's such an honor to have her on the blue team and taking the blue pill or whatever she wants
to say. Oh, the red pill. Oh, no, we don't want the blue pill. Take the red pill.
Well, I'm on the blue team, which is the good side, and the red team is the one with the fallen angels. And the wild beast and the false religion and the money anger. So that's what we always say on Freedomizer Radio anyways. The blue team is where we want to be.
Well, I'll have to look into what you mean by that, because I haven't heard that before, the blue team.
Yeah, the blue team is the team that is supporting God's kingdom. And the King of Kings and Lords of Lords and the universe, and on the side of righteousness and love.
Well, I want to be on that team.
Well, that's why I said it's such an honor to have you on the blue team.
Good, good.
Excellent. Well, Cookie, I would love for us to have a time for some proclamation here. I think this is
okay. Okay. You want me to find one real quick?
I do.
Okay, let's see which one we got.
Cookie is excellent at pulling proclamations out of her hat with the help of her angels, and they relate specifically to the topics that we're dealing with and what we've been talking with during the program.
Well, we're going to do deck. Declaration for Humanity. How is that?
Perfect.
Okay. As a spokesperson for humanity, I choose to walk through the veils of illusion to be well, whole, perfect in mind, body, and soul, and experience my divine perfection.
I will no longer live in a world which distorts truth. I will no longer allow another life form to manipulate, violate, or coerce my efforts to exercise my free will and experience my divine expression. I claim my free will and sovereignty. I call forth all energies blocking, distorting, manipulating, or controlling my life, my world, my creations, in any form, on any levels of consciousness, and transmute them into the divine expression of creative love. I stand empowered. I claim responsibility for my world, my creations, and my choices. I call forth all individuals within humanity who hold this vision to stand as one in voice, one in mind, and one in intent, as one in consciousness. I dissolve the veils of illusion and transmute them into the divine expression of creative love and return them to the Creator Source to be used only in the divine expression of creative love in a harmonious sequence. For all life forms co-creating with humanity, I claim my spiritual truth as I honor all others, as I honor myself in my words, my deeds, and my actions. I am the divine expression of creative love. I am whole, and so it is. Take a deep breath, exhale, and thank you very much. Amen.
Amen.
Oh,
wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, the phone lines are still open. I hope that you will take the time to call in and share your thoughts on this subject. 347-324-3704. And while we're waiting to see if we have any other callers, I really would like to play something for you. It is... It's the audio from the YouTube video of my special guest on Saturday.
I would like to introduce you to Sky. When the world's youth gets it in their mind to spread awareness on such an important topic, you know that we're on the right track. Sky is 13 years old, and he wanted to make an awareness video. Check it out on YouTube by searching on GMO World. And the number 3. God bless you, Sky. Your father must be so proud.
What a GMO world. Ah, the skies are blue, now turning white with Roundup sprayed on everybody. And I think to myself, what a GMO world. Monsanto's politician, so eager to deny the scientific study and animals that died. Awesome on the judgment, saying, let's have the truth. They want to sell us their poisonous food. I have babies crying. I watch them grow. I hope they'll live with no GMO. And I think to myself, not a GMO world. No, I've
caller from area code 951. Your mic is live.
Well, I want to thank Donna for the explanation on some very, very important key puzzle pieces. We're all supplying pieces to a puzzle we're trying to understand. And this is so key. I hope people are passing this on because maybe somebody will get the light bulb because these are very key. And Cookie, I just wanted to thank her. The affirmation was awesome. And that's all I have to say. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Diana. We appreciate you calling in. She is such a dear heart and does so much to help.
And there's many out there, too. You know, it's wonderful Diane calls in, and I know there's 100 to 200 to 300 to thousands of more. So keep up the good work, Cheryl, Diane, you know, Donna, and I keep trying to do my part, too, and that's what it's all about.
That's right. Well, that just blessed me. That just made my day.
Oh, you know, I had as soon as the GMO song thing was over, I had to make somebody else talk because I was getting all choked up.
That's a great song.
Very, very powerful. Well, I'd like to end my program today with another song, and that is Titania Mores. We're all on the same side because that's what we are. That's what we're doing here at Freedomizer Radio, aligning ourselves with each other, all on the same side. Thank you so much, Donna, and thank you very much, Cookie. I love you, love you, love you. Thank you, Diana, and God bless everyone.
Thank you so much. Love you guys.
Need a better perspective. Need some time to reflect it. To remember how similar we all are. We all want the same thing. A chance to follow our dreams. To raise a family of love and liberty. But don't forget. So don't forget.